Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Donna Lowry from GPB's Lawmakers, filling in today for Bill Nigut. Thanks for joining us. A reminder that you can log on to the GPB News Facebook page right now and not only hear us, but you can see us too. We'll monitor your comments there, and you can also comment on our Twitter page, which is @PoliticsGPB. Now, let's meet today's guest. Jim Galloway, I'm glad to be able to say this. He's lead political writer for the AJC, and I'm thrilled that you're here today with me.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's a particularly good-looking group of people we are today.
I love that. He starts out right. Compliments always work. All righty. And new to us today is Senator Tanya Anderson, who represents Lithonia. You were a former mayor, and you're also vice president of the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus, and you're joining us for the first time here on Rewind. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here.
Welcome. And also new, Angelique Moore, a political consultant and fundraiser, and she served as deputy finance director for the Brian Kemp campaign, gubernatorial campaign. You're also first on Rewind. And so thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me today.
We're so glad. We'll get you to talk a little bit about yourselves later, okay? We'll find out more about you, so get ready. We don't want all your history, but a little bit. So for now, let's start by quickly mentioning some good news. The governor's office sent out a press release saying Georgia's June net tax collections are up 7.4% compared with a year ago. And for the 2019 fiscal year that ended on June 30th, the net tax collections were up 4.8% compared to the 2018 fiscal year. Again, good news. And I wanted to mention it because it just came down this morning. What reflections, Jim, on that?
Well, generally when that happens, when something like this happens, what it means is the legislature has a little bit more money to play with when it comes in January. It's an election year, so you're going to probably see some Republican pressure for tax breaks. You might also see, remember that Brian Kemp promised teachers a $5,000 pay increase. That he only got to $3,000 this year, so you might see a little bit play there. The other thing that this does, it kind of points to the general political climate, which is we've got a good economy going, and in a good economy that generally favors the incumbent. And in this upcoming presidential race, it'll redound to the David Perdue's benefit, the senator from U.S. But what we're seeing, if you look at a lot of these polling numbers, you're seeing that the good economy, at least as far as the presidential race, doesn't translate to popularity. That there's a gap that we've never seen before. That's something different. That people are feeling good about where they are fiscally, but they're taking a look at the current administration and they're finding it wanting.
That's interesting. Senator Anderson, this is good news for you that we have this money coming in, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Now, any more thoughts about it? Any more comments you want to make? Okay, not right now. You told me you didn't want to talk a lot about money today, so I'll keep that in mind.
If you're on the budget committee, you're not on the budget committee, right?
I am not.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you talk to somebody on the budget committee, what do you want to see?
We do want to see increases. We do want to see our taxes and revenue. We do want to see the increase in that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to hurt people in the process, but we do want to see an increase in it.
So money is good. Money coming in good. Okay. Okay, let's change gears a little bit. Let's get into something you've written about, Jim. Last month's U.S. Supreme Court ruling that takes power away from the federal court over political gerrymandering. It is likely to have a significant impact on Georgia's state house races in 2020. It comes at a time when Democrats are aiming to win a majority at the Capitol following their significant gains in 2018. Then there's the fallout from the anti-abortion law, plus the dissension within the state GOP over House Speaker David Ralston and the legislative leave law that has led to delays in his court cases. So, Jim, in your report, you say the high court's decision on gerrymandering will put more emphasis on both parties on about 24 races?
Yeah. Okay. What this does is, come 2020, we're going to have a presidential race. Everybody knows that. We're going to have a state Senate race, a U.S. Senate race. Everybody knows that. But what this Supreme Court decision did was on allowing political gerrymandering, the drawing of lines that allow a political party to increase its hold on power. What that does is it really puts the focus on, say, maybe about 24 state House races, not the state Senate races, but state House races. These races that are normally are just kind of in the background of an election campaign. It's going to bring these little tiny races up to the forefront. They will be more important than the presidential race and the U.S. Senate race if you are a Georgia Republican or if you're a Georgia Democrat. Because what the situation is, okay, you know that we've got a census coming in 2020, and there's been the talk about the citizenship question here, okay? The census occurs in 2020. In 2021, legislatures all over the country will get those numbers, the results of that, and they will begin redrawing districts because of that. Now, right now, Democrats in Georgia are shut out. They lost the gubernatorial race in November. The state Senate is still pretty far out of reach. It would take a near miracle for them to win the state Senate in November 2018. Their only goal that appears achievable at this point is the state House. There's a 15 seat gap between House Republicans, who have 105 seats, and Senate and House Democrats, who have 75. They pick up 15, they pick up 16, they are in control of the chamber, and thus they have a seat at the table when it comes to redistricting. And that means they can help determine who Georgia sends to Congress.
Yeah, and then your number crunchers at the AGC looked at things, and while there were a lot of people who voted in the governor's race, they did not vote in these lesser races, and I guess your numbers crunchers figured out that that happened more with Democrats than Republicans.
Right, and this is something that Tanya may want to come in on. What happened was, you've got there was something like 1.32 percentage points that separated Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams at the gubernatorial level.
Sure.
You know, just what, about 60,000 votes, maybe 55,000 votes. Mm-hmm. Then the Brian Kemp, the races for all the races for state House, all the Republican votes for state House cast were maybe, I think, 50,000 short of that. It was a small drop off,
sure.
But you had a huge drop off on the Democratic side of Democratic votes cast for House members. It was something like triple the size of the Republican drop-off.
And a lot of that, what, name recognition?
We looked at it. It's not who was running unopposed and who wasn't, because you had almost the same number of people running opposed. I think what you have is you had an excellent gubernatorial campaign waged by Abrams, but it didn't filter down far enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means is the Georgia Democrats are going to have a really tough job of making sure the excitement that she generated in 2020 really filters down to the grassroots level.
Yeah, Tanya, you want to...
And I think it will. I think it will, because people saw the potential. And I think folks who were actually in those races did not capitalize on that. And so now that they see the potential, then folks who are actually running again or running in new House districts, then that they will garner the support and bring the energy with them to galvanize folks to the polls.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to talk with you about on this subject is the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus. You're the vice chair of that. The Supreme Court's decision, afterwards, you guys sent out a press release and said politicians will select their voters versus the right of voters to select their politicians. Talk a little bit about the group's feeling on this.
I think that it is very, very important that the voters choose their politicians, because this game has been played for far too long, how there's gerrymandering and the lines are drawn and people are not choosing who represents them well or who has their best interests at heart. And so it is imperative that we make it very plain and very clear to the voters that it is time for them to speak up and be at the table to say that, you know, I'm going to be counted in the census, and then I'm going to the polls and I'm going to choose who I still, no matter what, still choose who I want to represent me.
Okay, Angelique, I want to get you in on this. Any insight on how the Georgia GOP is looking at the ruling, and especially in recognizing how Democrats feel are going to feel this even more pressure to seek a majority in the House?
Well, I believe when it comes to constituents and the voters, one year is a lifetime in politics. So you're looking at a year, maybe a little bit longer, before people really get started. So it may drop in those votes that turn out, unless you said, Jim, you brought up Abrams and other Democratic leaders to garner support for those local level races. And however, they may be concentrating more so on presidential races, congressional, larger races. So
it's interesting. There were 22 House district contests mm-hmm. in November 18, mm-hmm. where Stacey Abrams got 40% or more of the vote, and yet they elected a GOP lawmaker. And so that's kind of the core of your focus that both sides are going to have. Mm-hmm. And in 15 of those 22 seats,
yes.
Stacey Abrams got 45% of the vote, and yet the GOP lawmaker still won. So that's kind of your area. And what I would add here is that I think in a strange, you mentioned this a little bit going into this segment, is one of the strange things is I think House Speaker David Ralston may be one of the people to benefit from this. He has had this ongoing fight with a faction of his Republican caucus. You know, maybe 10 members have signed on to a request for him to resign his speakership because of this of his problems with his law firm. He says he's addressed them. His clients were getting court delay after court delay after court delay, citing. And he was citing his occupation as a legislator. And he says that's all been repaired. They're not quite satisfied. But if this could be a crisis year for the GOP, because this is the first time since they took power in 2002 that they face the very real possibility that they could lose at least a little bit of control in the Capitol, and that means this rebellion is likely to be quieted at least until after the November vote.
It sounds like, Angelique, a lot of this is issues oriented right now rather than maybe name recognition or anything else.
That's fair, exactly, and I completely agree. It's the internal fighting. So that has to stop. And whether or not you agree with David Ralston being speaker, that needs to be put aside after that vote is taken and focus on keeping your majority. If you have no majority, then you have no Republican speaker.
So that infighting worries you. Yeah.
It is what worries me. And we did just have a Republican state convention as well, where we elected the former Senate pro tem, David Schaefer, who used to be the executive director of the state party. And I believe that's one of the best things we've done in a long time as an organization, as a party statewide, to elect him, because he's going to do, and he has been doing, a very good job beginning to raise funds and work on the national level, and then also organizing.
And some unity?
Unity as well as organizing.
Okay. Tanya, did you want to comment a little bit on what they've said?
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
All righty.
I'm good.
Go ahead. We'll go ahead and move on then to another topic. Maybe a bit unexpected that the Georgia Right to Life group, it's an anti-abortion group, and it has dropped its endorsement of lawmakers who voted for the so-called heartbeat bill because the group doesn't think it went far enough. And the law bans abortion. As you know, the heartbeat bill, once a doctor detects a heartbeat. But it also has exemptions for rape and incest, or if the life of the mother is at risk, or if the fetus is terminal. And Jim, what more can you tell us about this decision by the Georgia Right to Life?
Okay,
people?
This is if you are into Republican politics in Georgia, this is not really a surprise. This is something that we've seen. I've been writing about for at least 20 years or so. You've got a division, a very sincere division within the anti-abortion movement. And for the longest time, for instance, you had Sadie Fields with the Georgia Christian Coalition on one side of this divide, and Georgia Right to Life on the other side of this divide. And it's really over whether you allow an exception for abortion bans for cases of rape or incest, which are very minuscule. It doesn't, you know, they don't happen that often. You have the old Georgia Christian Coalition favor those exemptions. Georgia Right to Life never has. So you have this dynamic continuing even up to today, because House Bill 481 has exceptions for rape and incest, but only if the woman submits to a police report. Mm-hmm. Because of those exceptions, Georgia Right to Life says that's not enough. It's kind of a if you're in the anti-abortion movement, it's a case of letting the perfect become the enemy of the good. And you have this. You have what is the new group? Family Policy Alliance, I think.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, Cole Munzio is the leader, and you know he vowed over the weekend he would never work with Georgia Right to Life until they reformed themselves because he's supporting those lawmakers who did back House Bill 481.
And then there's the Georgia Life Alliance, who are also supporting those lawmakers. So I'm curious, Angelique, how severe a blow losing the endorsement of Georgia Right to Life will be for these lawmakers, do you think?
I believe in some areas it may hurt. It may hurt unless they're able to get out to the constituents and let them know why. But again, you said that there's the other organization, not Georgia Right to Life, but
those are the Family Policy Alliance.
Yeah,
I think.
And there's some others.
Yeah, the Georgia Life Alliance. Yes. I saw quotes.
So you may be able to get other endorsements.
Yeah, it's
called reasonable, you know. And if people have been who are elected and have been doing a good job and had that endorsement before, and then it's retracted, surely people would be able to understand.
This is something that would affect only Republican lawmakers, mm-hmm. and only in Republican primaries. It would allow a candidate to say run to the right of you if you voted for House Bill 481 with the Georgia Right to Life imprimatur. But to Angelique's point, if that same incumbent is running, saying, oh, is waving, you know, I've got the Georgia Christian Alliance endorsement, then it's a small but not unimportant detail. I think
too it's sometimes it is more difficult as an incumbent to run because you do have a record. So if you've been doing a good job at the General Assembly representing your constituents, then you ought to be able to show a track record and run on that as well. That'll outshine everything.
Okay. I know, Representative Anderson, I know you have some thoughts on the heartbeat bill. You mentioned something to me. You learned recently that the whole issue of personhood, the personhood provisions of the law, are something of concern to Democrats, in particular during the 2020 census.
Absolutely. This bill allows for the fetus to be counted as soon as the heartbeat is detected. And federally, the Census Bureau needs a birthday. And so that would not be possible with this bill. You can predict a birth date, but they're not counted in the census. And so it's pretty much not something that can be used.
It's a really interesting question and a really interesting dilemma. Okay, we do have an ACL lawsuit that has been filed seeking to block the bill. A judge hasn't. We haven't had our first hearing on it yet, and so that bill may not be. It's still in effect, but as it goes into effect, it's got this whole the personhood provision has all sorts of implications. For instance, you're allowed to count it as a dependent in your taxes.
Sure.
You know, how do you prove it? We don't know. There's the joke, of course, whether a woman would be allowed to drive alone in the carpool lane. You know, it's right now the state patrol says no. But you've got all of these little permutations that haven't been worked out yet, that come with declaring a 6 week old, or could, you know, a fetus that's only several weeks old, kind of giving him the same legal status as a full blown human being.
And child support is included in that as well.
Right. Child support, too.
Yeah. So, it's interesting that this, we've got the challenge, but if it does become law, it's January 2020. So we're talking, and right after that, we're dealing with the census. So,
yeah, but it doesn't, the federal census isn't affected. The law says that any state census,
okay.
A pregnancy would be counted.
Interesting. So I'm sure we're going to talk more about this. But right now we're going to get to our first break, quick break. But coming up, we're going to talk about the governor's quiet appointment that has some people raising their eyebrows a little bit, and how the governor is responding to a lawsuit that claims Georgia is discriminating against Puerto Ricans who apply for their driver's licenses. You're listening to Political Rewind on GPB. We're back in 1 minute.
You know, selling a car can be a hassle, but donating it is a whole different story. Let us take it off your hands or off your driveway and turn it into public radio and maybe even a tax deduction. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, and here is how to donate.
Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
On the next Fresh Air, a bioethicist's struggle with opioids. Terry Gross speaks with Travis Reeder. After shattering his foot, followed by 6 surgeries, he became dependent on opioids. With difficulty, he was able to wean himself off. Now, he's an advocate for opioid use reform. His new book is titled In Pain. Join us.
Fresh Air is 3 o'clock this afternoon here on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Donna Lowry from GPB's Lawmakers, filling in today for Bill Nygut, and we are joined by the AJC's Jim Galloway, political consultant Angelique Moore, and State Senator Tanya Anderson of Lithonia. So thank you guys for being here. Before we go any further, let's celebrate some really great news by taking a moment to congratulate the U.S. women's soccer team on their big World Cup win. How about that? Pretty cool. This morning, we do know that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi invited the team to Capitol Hill. They have declined an invitation to the White House.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of the larger equal pay movements that I've ever seen.
Now they have this bigger platform now, of course, to talk about their equal pay platform, equal pay with their male counterparts, and they're already all over the news still talking about it. It's almost good for them. You know, we got to win, now pay us what we deserve.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I like it.
Yeah.
Any opportunity for greater equality.
That's it. Yeah.
I love it.
Are you soccer fans?
I don't watch it, but as long as the USA is winning, I'm good.
That's the way I feel about it, you know, and with any sports. I let my husband take care of all of that, so yeah. So let's move on to something a little closer to home. Governor Kemp has appointed former U.S. Congressman Bob Barr to the Judicial Qualifications Committee. This is a powerful agency that has oversight when it comes to judges in the state, and we know from a Channel 2 report that the Georgia Supreme Court, that the Justice David Namias reportedly sought to block the nomination. Jim, do we know what's behind that move
no,
by
don't.
Namias?
We don't know why, but that's fairly rare. I can't remember it ever happening before. And this is the Judicial Qualifications Committee. There are appointments that a governor can make that are kind of, you know, there's a third tier, there's a second tier. This is a first tier nomination here because and Angelique can back me up on this. You know, the emphasis that Republicans have put on picking members of the judiciary. This goes to that. I mean, one of Governor Nathan Deal's big legacies was the number of judicial appointments that he made. And so who calls the list of potential judges down becomes very, very important. And Bob Barr, the former congressman, has been now on that list. And you do find some antipathy toward Barr. Well, he was a 7th district congressman. If you remember, he got after redistricting, I think it was in the 2001 redistricting, Democrats didn't do him any favors, and he chose to run against John Linder to challenge him for that seat. He lost. Mm-hmm. But after that, he became a Libertarian candidate for president, and in Republican circles, sometimes that doesn't fly too well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Angelique. How's he seen by the GOP?
He did endorse Brian Kemp fairly early, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he?
He did, and he was often in the office, and he's been a good friend and endorsed me when I ran. And
did you run for?
I ran for clerk of Fulton County Superior Court in 2004. And then I ran when Ed Lindsay decided not to run again for state house, which is the house seat initially. Beth Betzkin had won.
And that's Mullins now? I forget who's in that seat right now.
Oh, that's Jen Jordan's seat. Beth Betzkin. It's Eric Allen. No, that's Rich Gulick's.
We're really bad. We don't have everything in bed. We'll figure that out and get back on that one. So go ahead, Angelique.
Bob and he and his wife, Jerry, have been very wonderful and active always.
Very prominent in Cobb.
Absolutely, which is where I was partially raised to as well in Kennesaw. And before that rural background I have in Ranger, Georgia, where
Tom Graves is from.
Thank you. So, nonetheless, although Bob ran as a Libertarian, he does have a huge following, including myself. I think it actually helps with the outreach, and I believe that Governor Kemp has been doing a wonderful job in his appointments, including this one, and that it can help bring unity. It can help bring in those libertarians who may not like any particular issue or items that the Republicans or the governor are supporting, and again, help bring unity with Bob.
Okay. Just want to get back to that seat. It's District 54, Betsy Holland, a Democrat.
Yes.
Now
yes.
that seat turned yes. this time. So, you mentioned that the governor is getting kudos for some of his the diversity of his appointments. I didn't know whether Representative Anderson, you want to talk a little bit about that a little bit, or even the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus, a position on the Judicial Qualifications Committee.
I think the key is to make sure that we have a judiciary that is fair and not partisan in every appointment so that we, can keep Georgia moving in a very, very productive and progressive way, but to just keep the judiciaries fair and nonpartisan.
Yeah. You got to wonder if Justice Nambias knows something that we don't know, though, with this. And they were both former federal prosecutors, so
right, yeah.
I don't know, if we're going to find out something down the road, or is it just a personal thing?
And quite frankly, I don't know. I know Bob Barr. I've known him far longer than I have Nambias. And I don't know that justice all that well. So I rather than speculate, it's one of those things sure. where I just prefer to just to sit back and wait and see what happens.
Exactly.
Bob Barr was when I was a younger reporter, I'll say that. He was always available. That's the one mm-hmm. thing I loved. I could call him on a Sunday afternoon and he'd stand outside in front of his home and talk with me. So very, very accessible, I remember.
I remember hearing stories that when he first got elected as well, he used to stay in his office in D.C. He would sleep there. Oh, he's so expensive, right? So to be there and work for his constituents, he would go up there and stay in his office.
Okay, we'll see what
down
happens.
Down to earth,
next.
Great guy.
All right, thank you on that one. Let's talk about something else involving the governor, and that's the lawsuit that alleges discrimination against Puerto Ricans when it comes to applying for driver's licenses in Georgia. The governor has said he's asking for a full investigation into the claims, and this comes after a lawsuit that drew the attention of the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rosello. And the lawsuit describes how Puerto Rican residents who've moved to Georgia are required to complete questionnaires that residents from other states are not having to fill out. And let's be clear, Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. The citizens are Americans, just like those who live in Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. I almost said the District of Columbus. I don't know why that where that came from. The lawsuit says Puerto Ricans have to answer questions such as name the frog, native to Puerto Rico, and who is Roberto Clemente? I'm from Pittsburgh, so I definitely know who he is, or he was. Jim, this story gained a lot of attention over the around the world even this week.
Yeah, it was number one. It was the suit was filed, I think, on Thursday, and the it alleged that, as you said, you know, you had drivers from Puerto Rico wanting to. Being asked what the state frog was. I mean, I don't think if anybody know the state frog of Georgia?
I looked it up. It's something like the green frog or something. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's nothing really unique.
But it really, I will tell you what, what I think really got everybody's attention was this 13-page document that the attorneys for the Puerto Rican man, now a Georgia resident and U.S. citizen, got from during the discovery process of the lawsuit. They received it. They got it in December 18. It's a 13 page document that says these are questions you need to ask Puerto Ricans to see if they're truly there. Now what this kind of dates back. Nobody is talking about this. Okay, you're right, Governor. After I published this
right,
document,
you did.
That's when Kemp said, "I want a full investigation." All right, okay, but I think it goes back to there was an incident in 2010 in Puerto Rico where you had thieves go in and steal a bunch of birth certificate blanks. This was 9 years ago. All right. The government of Puerto Rico said, okay, told everybody in the U.S. do not take do not accept any birth certificate as ID that was issued after July, before July 2010. Okay, and it appears, you know, if I had to guess, I would say that Georgia never lifted that ban.
No kidding.
That's supposition on my part, but the 2010 ban is listed in that document.
Right.
Even though the information is so old that there's a question in there that says who's the governor of Puerto Rico?
Wow!
And it says Pedro Rosello, who is the father of the current governor and left office, I think, in 2003.
That's
so it is, now I had a conversation with the spokesperson for the State Department of Drivers Services, and she could not tell me who had that document, whose possession it was in, how widespread that document was, but she did say that document had never received official, that was never officially approved. That is a document that's been circulating that has no has no history of being approved by the hierarchy of the DDS.
That's interesting because it's a class action suit, so somebody's looking at it. You brought a copy of it with you, Senator
somebody's
Anderson.
Somebody's using it somewhere.
Yeah, they're in the class action portion. They say maybe 40 people.
Yeah,
they know of might be affected.
So, did Georgia Legislative Black Caucus have anything to say about this? Or I'm thinking maybe the state NAACP or any, you know, the Southern Center for Human Rights, of course, is involved with this
suit. This is something that never should have happened at all. And so we are very strong about discrimination and the potential around it. And this document and the questionnaire and the questioning of folks who are already U.S. citizens trying to gain a Georgia state license. It's something that, as I said, shouldn't have never happened and should not be happening now.
Okay.
And now I will speak up for Angelique here. Okay, because the timing here is important. I mean, the document was obtained by these attorneys in December 2018. That was a month before Brian Kemp took office. So this is not his problem, but it is his problem to clean up. And he put out a fairly strong statement on Friday, I think.
If there's anything you can believe, it's believe Brian Kemp. If he says he's going to do it, he will.
Yeah. So, but you know, Georgia's had this ugly spotlight on it since last November with mm-hmm. all the election allegations, voter suppression, and so much more. It seems to me that this is the kind of negative story that Governor Kemp has worked hard to move away from. And here it is. How does he fight back with this view of Georgia discriminating against anyone?
It is ugly. It's unfortunate. I'm half Hispanic myself. However, if it's there, it needs to be addressed, and I believe Governor Kemp will address it.
And Donna, you got to remember, I mean, there are times when an incident like that can be helpful to a governor who wants to repair his image. I mean, he as we've seen, I mean, in the polling that came out last January, I mean, it's improved, but he came out pretty damaged from that race with Stacey Abrams, and this is just the kind of incident that, you know, could really help him if he shows a willingness to go at it and go after it hard and openly and very quickly tell everybody what was found.
Yeah. You know, last week when this first came out, we said on the show we may not hear from him, you know, before this week, and yet his office came out last week with something during the holiday.
His people called at 5 o'clock on Friday. They were very intent on not letting the weekend go before they address this.
Yeah. So the lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Atlanta last week. So we'll see what happens next on that one.
You know, my prediction. You're gonna have to Mr. Kemp come out with something, and then you're going to see this settled very quickly.
Ah. Well, I don't think
this lawsuit is going to go very far before it's over.
Okay, we'll replay that, so. Because, like I said, it's gained attention worldwide and very quickly because it was a holiday weekend. Let's get another break out of the way, though, right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about Teresa Tomlinson, the Democratic candidate in Georgia's U.S. Senate race, and we'll discuss a ruling that allows the Georgia General Assembly to continue keeping records away from the public. You're listening to Political Rewind on GPB.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227. And thanks so much.
Beep, 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 yeah.
Puerto Rico is turning towards solar energy. Many living on the island had already lost trust in its electric system before Hurricane Maria hit 2 years ago.
Because it's weak, and the people start to thinking about trying to find a long-term solution, and the sun is one of them.
I'm Audie Cornish. The future of solar power in Puerto Rico, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and gpbnews.org, or ask your smart speaker to play GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Donna Lowry from GPB's Lawmakers, filling in today for Bill Nygut. And we are joined today by the AJC's Jim Galloway, political consultant Angelique Moore, and State Senator Tanya Anderson of Lithonia. And let's take this time to hear a little bit more about you. You both of you. Angelique, you told us a little bit about running for office a couple of times. Tell us what you're doing now. And you have a company that's with an interesting name, I think.
My company is A Georgia Company.
A Georgia Company. There are a lot of Georgia companies. Yours is A Georgia Company.
It is. My specialty tag is AGACO.
Okay.
Shouldn't it be The Georgia Company?
Thank you, Jim.
So tell us.
I'm one of your biggest fans, too.
Tell us what a Georgia company does.
Well, I work in political consulting. Running campaigns, I do events, special events, fundraising, and I've been active and working in politics for over 25 years now.
Wow.
So I got started in high school.
Yes, you had to have gotten started in high
thank
school.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Let's talk. Get to know you more, a little bit more, Senator. Tell us a little bit about your background. You were mayor and city council person in Lithonia. Talk about that a little bit, and then.
Absolutely. So I started out as a city councilwoman in 2006. Never really wanted to be in politics, but I wanted to, of course, serve the community. And then I moved into, I won't say moved into, but it happened that I became mayor because I was vice mayor and served as mayor interim for 30 days and then actually had to run for the seat. So that happened 3 years later. And then 3 years later, I ended up in the newly formed House District 92 in representing Lithonia and Conyers. And so Senate District 43 is DeKalb, Rockdale, and Newton, portions of DeKalb, Rockdale, and Newton. So I have six cities in my district, and it helps having local government experience in order to be able to properly serve the folks that you represent on those levels.
Hey, Tanya, I don't want to throw you a curve here, but okay, so you've been mayor, you've been a city council woman and mayor. What do you think of the cityhood movement that keeps percolating in South DeKalb in particular?
It's very interesting how easy it looks to be a city and become a city. And then all the revenue and all of the employees and all of the services that you're supposed to provide then becomes overwhelming, and you got to kind of juggle and try to figure out how to make this happen. I think for DeKalb that having local representation is great, but it also takes civic engagement in order to grow the county and the city that you live in.
And a good commercial base.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then, you know, I live in Fulton County, and we represent the growing pains of all of that with all the cities that are now there. And I live in the new city of South Fulton, which is still going through growing pains, but actually doing much better than I could have predicted. So, no. Well, thank you for being here. We
Absolutely.
Appreciate your voice here on Political Rewind. Let's talk a little bit about the U.S. Senate race. Tomorrow, actually, the AJC's Greg Bluestein will be here, and he will talk with his guests about some of the fundraisings by the candidates in that seat. And he'll have on Senator P.K. Martin and the AJC's Kevin Riley and Representative Mary Margaret Oliver. But today, let's talk more about an article specifically that was in Mother Jones Magazine about the Democratic candidate, Teresa Tomlinson. And she's, of course, the former mayor of Columbus, who announced her candidacy early, has gained some traction, but we expect others to jump in. For now, she's a big name, and the Mother Jones article, Jim, mixed reviews on Tomlinson a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there was some. It gave her credit for some great revitalization efforts in downtown Columbus. You have some pushback from the local NAACP president down there, who's said he, you know, she's the nominee. He'll vote for her, but it's really interesting. There's a parallel that you can draw between Teresa Tomlinson, who, as all of our listeners know, frequently was a guest here, but there's a line that can be drawn connecting her to the troubles of Pete Buttigieg, because a mayor is an executive. And it is harder for an executive to run for higher office than just about any. Tanya here is shaking her head because she was the mayor. She knows some of that stress.
Yeah.
But you've got to make hardcore decisions, and each of those decisions is going to make an enemy.
Yeah, and Mayor Pete is dealing with a similar issue that she dealt with, apparently, while she was, during her 2011, during her first term, a rookie police officer mistook a young African-American man named Tony Carr for a bank robber. The officer shot and killed Carr. Later, the GBI cleared the officer. And so that's something that's still in the minds of some people.
I mean, she had no legal footing to get involved,
right.
but there are people who thought that maybe she had more of she could have provided more of a civic voice in that incident.
And I'll say this, as a former mayor, it is the only seat that is not elected is the chief of police. It is an appointed seat by the mayor or the council, whichever right. type of form of government is strong or weak. Mm-hmm. And so you appoint people who pretty much are aligned with your values and views, and it is hard to not stand behind that person as you've been as you've appointed them. But as you said, Jim, those decisions aren't always popular, and it just takes the leadership in that person to stand up and make those decisions. But it also takes the leadership in that person to have ownership of that decision, and either to make another hard decision or, you know, create a new one that causes some discomfort yeah. to some yeah. to some people.
I didn't read anything in the Mother Jones article that was disqualifying. Did you? I mean,
no. I'm specifically speaking of the mayor, mm-hmm. Mayor Pete's situation right. with the chief of police and how right. mm-hmm. chief of police, how chiefs are, in position now. In most cities, they're not elected at all. In most cities, you have them appointed either by the mayor or the council, depending on the form of government. I'm just making the point that if you make this appointment and you stand behind this person, then you have to make the decision to either remove them and bring someone else on, or just deal with the consequences of the situation is my right. point and where I'm going. So,
right. Right. Donna, we should note that there are a couple others who've been mentioned.
Right.
Sarah Riggs Amico
sure.
Is looking at this race. We're told that she's hired a couple of old Stacey Abrams hands from last year.
Ran for lieutenant governor.
That's right. And also a name that we're just kind of picking up.
Today, actually, Clarkston's mayor. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, I am.
Ted Terry.
Yes. Ted Terry, we're hearing that he is looking at it, too.
Yeah, John Ossoff, too. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, Ted Terry would be an interesting one because he would pull the field far to the left.
Yeah.
Call my friend.
Yeah. Okay.
Another mayor.
So this should be interesting. I wonder, Angelique, in how the Republican Party is looking at Tomlinson at this point in terms of, you know, Senator Perdue is pretty popular right now and doing well. His strong alliance with the President Trump has been good for him.
Yes, he's done a wonderful job. As you know, he got elected as an outsider. So he's been able to work for us Georgians, and honestly not have anybody that he needs to talk with first, saying that he can go on his agenda as a businessman and get things done. I think he's done a wonderful job. So there is Tomlinson running now and Amico looking into it, and Ossoff, you said, and others. So that's honestly, as a consultant, I'll tell you, that's good. That's good for us.
It always helps you raise money if you've got an opponent.
It does.
And lots of opponents help too, huh?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that for now.
You said you're going to talk more about this tomorrow.
That's right. They're going to talk about it. Did you want to mention something with money real quick?
I'll leave that to the guest.
Okay. All right.
I'll say that there's a deep interest in his seat based on, you know, Mayor Tomlinson coming out as strong as she has already.
And so, what are you hearing in terms of the Black community and their interest with her?
Nothing yet.
Okay.
Just waiting to see, you know, who else hops in the race.
Yeah, and you know, people were waiting, for so long to find out whether Abrams was going to go into the race, and then so now it's been a few months to where Tomlinson has just been out there by herself, so it should be interesting. So, yeah, we'll be talking on this show a lot more about this, I'm sure. But before we leave, I want to get to something the AJC reported this morning, Jim. On a 2-1 vote, a Court of Appeals panel decided that the documents held by the General Assembly and its offices are not subject to the Open Records Act. And, of course, cities, counties, most state agencies are legally bound to follow the Open Records Act.
Gosh.
Yeah.
The people who write the laws exempt themselves from the law. That has been a long sore spot with especially with news gathering organizations. But if you are a state lawmaker, the way you look at it is, look, I'm getting lots of private calls from my constituents. I've got some very sensitive issues being raised by them. You know, some of them of a very legally sensitive nature. I don't want them exposed. But at the same time, because those aren't exposed, we don't learn how the sausage is made. That takes a lot more work.
Yeah, I'm curious because you've been on the city level, okay, the council level, and now as a lawmaker, how you see this ruling?
I had to learn that we were not subject to the. I had to learn it because I came in the door expecting
it. Did you kick up your heels and say yay?
No, I did. I wonder what happened.
Right. So do you agree that there are some things that need to be private? Talk about
Absolutely.
That a little bit, Pam.
Absolutely. Well, we get emails, calls all the time about issues that can be very, very sensitive. And when we handle them, we try to handle them with kits and gloves so that people can feel safe coming to us, because sometimes they don't know who to go to. And I've gone to all these other people and no one can help me, but can you help me? And it gets to a place where we're almost in a client,
an attorney-client
mm-hmm. privilege situation. And so we want to continue to protect that. At the same time, we do want to be transparent. So I know my colleagues, one who you will interview tomorrow, is very high on that issue. And so it's we've just got to find a balance to where we need to start and stop.
Yeah, Angelique, I think, you know, there is that feeling of transparency that people want, but then possibly, you know, lawmakers should be considered different on that. Do you agree?
Well, I agree with the senator here that there are a lot of delicate issues that are discussed. And I'm sorry to my media friends, but we do also, we have the live video streaming of committee meetings. We have so much that is open record. You have disclosures by lobbyists. You have disclosures by the campaigns and the elected officials. So to review those. So I think perhaps you could look into it for a sunshine law on some issues, but I'm not sure what those issues would be.
Okay. All right, then. Well, I think you're right about that. I think you made a good point about all the ways we can find out about what's going on down there at the Gold Dome. I am thrilled that you guys were with me today, because that'll do it for Political Rewind. And I would like to thank Jim Galloway. Thank you so much for always being so insightful. Senator Tanya Anderson, thank you for your first time. And Angelique Moore for coming in, too.
Thank you
for listening. Our listeners out there, remember, if you missed any part of the show, or if you liked it so much that you want to listen again, you can find it on gpbnews.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Political Rewind returns tomorrow at 2:00.